Welcome everyone to the Flow Show. This is episode number 199. My man from Azerbaijan. I always with the name, it's going to be, we're going to do our best. Ramin.
You're doing good.
I'll let you do it. Let's Ramin Hajiev. Hajiev.
Ramin Hajiev from Azerbaijan. You were like better than 99.99% of Americans.
I'll take it. I'm not a perfectionist. I'll take it. But my friend, good to have you today. How are you?
Very good. Very good. How are you, Jeff?
I'm doing good. Just a quick message from our sponsor, Club GG, where you can create poker clubs for free, win hundreds of thousands of dollars in prizes, and play with your friends, which is pretty cool. But with that being said, Ramin, there's so much to talk about. Like I said, I don't want to spend the whole podcast on Azerbaijan, which is a very cool sounding country. And I know it's actually a beautiful place, and you speak very highly of it. So we will cover that. But first and foremost, how are you? Where are you? What's been going on for you recently?
I'm now at home in Baku in Azerbaijan, and I just arrived from Madrid. We went there with a few friends because I'm like a big football fan, and I love to go for the Champions League. And it was a special occasion where we had two Champions League games happening 2 days in a row, mm-hmm. in Madrid. So it was a Manchester City Real Madrid, well, Real Madrid Manchester City. And Atletico Madrid, Dortmund. So just came back from there. Now I'm at home. Everything's great.
That's awesome. And I know you're a big fan. Those are pretty special games. I got to catch some of it. And I know right now that now there's another today, right? There's a massive game.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll be watching.
Well, this actually, we were there right 1 week ago. So today there are return legs of the matches that happened last week today. So also they're playing in City, Manchester City Real, and Arsenal Bayern Munich.
Yep. Yeah. No. And so tell me, how is the culture of football in your country? Is that the main sport? Is that what people really follow?
No. It's a good question. Football is probably the most loved sports in Azerbaijan, but I cannot say we've been very successful, but in recent years we had a team, Karabakh, FK Karabakh. I know you also follow football and you're AC Roma fan. So Karabakh was actually is a team from Azerbaijan, Agdam, and it had lots of success in recent years.
Wait, is this the team that just lost where they were winning versus Bayern Leverkusen and stopped and two goals were scored? Is that because I think that is what that, I just saw.
That's a team. That's a team.
Oh, wow.
Basically, so they played. We had two great matches against Bayer Leverkusen in the knockout stage of Europa League, where we could handle them the first loss both times.
Yeah.
In Baku, they got away. They scored in the 91st minute or whatever, 92nd, 2-2. And then we were up 10 men in Germany. And I mean, still great success for Azerbaijan football.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, the Leverkusen didn't lose a game in the Bundesliga all year.
They trashed all their opponents and they beat, like, I don't know, 3-0 against Bayern Munich. And they come to a team, much smaller team with a budget that is like 100 times smaller than the Leverkusen. I think their whole budget is like 25 million or something. And we give them like a hard time.
Wow, that's cool.
That's what you, if you ask about football, And it's most loved sport, but not the main. We had our sport had lots of success in wrestling, boxing. This would be more traditional sports of Azerbaijan.
I think the coolest sounding country in the world that I know, maybe Djibouti is a fun one. So let's just cover a little bit of geography while before we dive into you and all your accomplishments in your life. I want to know about the country a little bit. So
we are on the shore of Caspian Sea, which is actually not even a sea. It's like the biggest lake in the world. It would be the smallest sea or the biggest lake. Okay. And we have five neighbors, Turkey, Russia, Iran, Georgia, and Armenia.
Okay.
We were used to be part of Soviet Union, and we became independent in 1991 when the Soviet Union basically collapsed. And we had hard times back then, and we got well, the war began with Armenia, which and they basically invaded our land. And this occupation was lasting for almost 30 years, more than 30 years, actually. And finally, I don't want to go much into the details, but finally, there was a war in 2022, after which we liberated our land. So now I can say that our country is has liberated all its land, and the conflict is over. And I'm not a fan of conflicts or wars, so I think especially we and our neighbors, we should live in peace and everybody be friendly.
Nice. Well, that sounds
and finally the conflict that was ongoing for 30 years and we lost lots of life, they lost a lot of life, is over, and life continues. Hopefully we will make great peace with everybody, all our neighbors, especially Armenia.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's again, some area I'm not so familiar with, and very, very, it sounds like a beautiful place. I mean, I've seen pictures, and
I can talk about this nature of the conflict, about the conflict, about the country, about the history forever. But I mean,
I generally, we don't do geography, but I'm generally fascinated and curious, because it's something I just never really have heard or know much about. Yeah, so I appreciate that. And how is poker popular there? Do people recognize you on the street? Is this on TV and bars? Like, is poker popular or my
generally, poker is not even allowed. So we don't have casinos. Poker is not allowed. So I only play poker when I travel abroad. And do people recognize me sometimes on the street? Yes, because especially after my win, there was a lot of exposure.
And you've been playing poker a long time. What got you into poker? Especially, it's not something common there in your country where you're from. How did you find poker?
So I think we talked with you about that, but I told you that I was playing professional tennis when I was up until 17 years old. So I left Azerbaijan to go to live in Spain when I was 11. And basically, we were practicing every day, going to school after school is over, and we had not much to do. So what we were doing, we were gathering with a friend, and nobody knew out of us how to play when I was back at 17 back then. And so one of the friends knew, and he kind of taught us, and that's how we spend our nights, evenings, played some 20 euro. Didn't go.
And did you know right away? Was that something you enjoyed it? You played games, other games?
I fell in love with it straight away. My nature, I'm a very competitive person. So I straight away fell in love with game. And after my tennis career was over, obviously, having all this competitiveness inside me, I had maybe that's how I got into poker so passionate, because I wanted to fulfill my competition nature, you know, and that's how I got deeper in the poker, I would say. Yeah, but it's not like the cultural thing or something. As I say, when there is no casinos or no live gaming, so it's like something. Oh yeah, my hand on my page.
There it is, that $4 million score, of course, very nice, but still 9 million. I mean, 5 million other scores. You're on the all-time money list, high up and number one in Azerbaijan, and by a lot. And these other players, are they still playing? Some of these guys that have, like, what's called?
Well, all these guys on top are my friends.
Okay.
Almost all of them. Yeah. Few are playing, few are not, few are traveling. But I would say nobody is probably traveling and playing as much as me.
For sure.
I mean, it's not the greatest accomplishment to be number one in Azerbaijan, because
it's still nice. It's
very flattering, but it was not so hard.
Hey, that's all right though. Listen, it's not easy to be number one, and it is a real, you know, it's impressive. And tell me about the stops, Triton. We're going to talk about your win, but tell me about Korea. You know, that was something that you go and is this places you've been before, or are these usually new places?
I was very excited for Korea. I was waiting for that stop. I tell you why, because I've been to Korea only once, Seoul, and it was like for one night because I was in a part of official delegation. I don't want to go into details. And when the delegation left, we had to leave. So I just had to stay in Seoul for one night. Mm-hmm. And it's a long flight. So when Triton announced Jeju, like, I'd never heard of this place, but I found it's like the island of South Korea. And yeah, I was like very excited to go. So flying that long, me and my wife, we planned the trip basically. Well, that I will go before and play poker. And after the Triton stop is finished, he would arrive to Seoul and we would check Seoul out. And then we would fly to Tokyo and very stay cool. a few nights there. And that was, I mean, I can say that I was in many places in the world. It's hard to fascinate me with something but I got very, especially from Tokyo, and I got very, like, it was very fantastic. I definitely want to go back.
It's funny. I did the exact same trip, Seoul, and then I was there went to the GG offices, went to the APT, and then I went over to Japan, Tokyo as well for the first time, and stunning, yeah, absolutely beautiful part of the world, and so different culturally, just very, very unique. So yeah, it sounds like similar experience. And how is it to play when you play and you go, because you're not playing all the stops, you're not playing poker all the time. So when you go and play and buy a 100K tournament, tell me what it's like when you is it exhilarating? Are you nervous? Is it fun? Is it what's the feeling?
Everything was maybe a bit nervous at start. Even my first Triton, I was a bit nervous first. But at the end of the day, I have been playing best players in the world in the high stakes surrounding for a long time already, even before Triton. There was 25K EPTs and 550K EPTs. And I mean, every time I sit at the table, I know that these guys are the best in the world. And sometimes I can acknowledge that I'm probably the weakest player at the table. And it's very special to be able to compete with them at a high level, which I definitely enjoy. And it's like truly say it's my passion.
And do you spend time improving your poker game? And if you do, what tools do you use to do that?
I know that there are a lot, many tools out there, like GTO Thorward. Obviously, I will not lie. I know how they look, like, and how they, but I mean, I don't use them more. What I like to do now, this Triton broadcasts of the final tables, which are, we have the best players all the time playing. And I like to rewatch them. Oh, why did he do that? Why did he do this? Thinking about the game. And I'm very lucky that, I mean, since, because being so long in this poker community circuit, I made obviously many poker friends, and like we became friends out of the poker scene. So when I can text the hand to one of my friends, and they would say their in inputs or what they think, and that's how, like, maybe improving
for sure. And who are some of the players that you really you talk with or that you respect in the game, or do you have a core group of guys?
Actually Nikita helped me a lot, and he's considered one of the best, if not the best. And we were actually in the event I won, I invited him. You remember, it was invitational event, right? So yeah, Nikita, man, I honestly, there are many, like, they're all friendly to me. Like, I never bother them too much, like, with the questions. So, but they're all happy to answer.
Yeah. It's,
when I'm in doubt.
I think that's the best way to learn too, to kind of watch some of the highest level replays and just to get feedback from players, look at a hand, talk of spots with the players. That's something that definitely is a big advantage. Yeah,
for sure.
Get honest.
And when you don't have this ego, or you know that somebody is better than you, and you're okay to go and ask, or you think you made a mistake and you just go and ask. And this is because sometimes I think problem of people that they just either shy to ask, or they think they're too good to ask someone. Mm-hmm. But being not like professional, or I mean, not considering myself best or something, I'm okay to go and ask the players that are clearly better players.
For sure. And And tell me a little more about tennis. You were a promising prospect as a youth. What was that a difficult decision to sort of forego going competitively in tennis, or was it kind of obvious for you that?
I mean, I like the passion I had before, now have now for poker, the same passion I had for tennis. The decision to stop it was not that hard, because I mean at that age, when you are 17 or 18, especially because I'm 36 now, Rafael Nadal is 37, so we played basically many of the same tournaments, and the sportsman himself knows at that point he can become great or no. So at that age, I was already understanding that I would not be, well, let's say, top 50. And in tennis, the money, the glory, all that's top 50, top 10. If you're under that, it's, I mean, so there was no point of continuing. Plus, I had, when I turned 17, I had two serious injuries. So in the age where you just have to go and play and win, I was out of training for 6-7 months. Mm-hmm. So it kind of happened naturally. But I'm definitely very happy for the years I spent in Spain, living alone, far from home, without parents, becoming independent human being. And so definitely I never regretted my decision. So I think everything in life has their periods. I think that was the right period for me, and very happy with all the decisions I made.
And so you went to a college there, or was it like a camp or a training?
No. It's called, Spain historically have one of the best tennis academies, they call it, in Europe. There is the in United States, there's like a Nico Bellettieri Nicodet Academy. If maybe you heard it, it's in Bradenton, Florida.
Yeah.
Basically a tennis camp, but you just go and live there.
You're saying like IMG, the IMG Academy.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's called IMG now, before it was called Nico Bellettieri. Yeah. So you basically go and live there, and you practice tennis 2 times a day, do fitness there. That's your training is like 6-7 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And my academy in Barcelona, the first one I attended, also had a school. So because my parents also wanted me not to stay out of school studies, because basically it's good to be a good sportsman, but you have to have some. So we were playing tennis all day and having our school after that, and then we were free.
Very cool. And how would you compare the level of tennis in these from what you understand in the US and the development versus this where you went? Like how is it different, or is it very similar?
Oh, it's in a way it's different. The levels are definitely very high, both in US and Spain. But I mean, if you're familiar with tennis, Spanish school is built on the clay courts. Mm-hmm. It's all the clay courts, it's all the long rallies, stop spins, like if you watch Roland Garros or Monte Carlo Masters, that's what it is. You barely have hard courts in Spain. Well, you have, but they're not many. But United States, it's all about hard courts. So this is like a clash of cool. Which one is better? I don't know. You can see the rankings and decide for yourself. But I think which one I like more? I like more clay court, obviously, because I grew on them.
And speaking of that difference in courts, what do you think about padel now and pickleball? My latest guest he's the number one ranked U.S. The player, Peter Alonso, who's just on. It's crazy what's going on in the stats of how fast these sports are growing in the courts and all that. But what do you like padel? Have you played it?
I good question. I love paddle. I'm not like, I love it.
Yep.
And I mean, when somebody tells me, let's go play tennis now, I'm like, I'm I don't want to play tennis now, to be honest. And it's like, and especially I know that I'll not play. I'm a little more overweight than I was there back then, and I will not play at the same level I was playing. But paddle is just fantastic, because it's like, it's easier to play, much easier for amateur to play, much more for easy, amateur to pick it up. So, and it's very dynamic sport. Especially, I'm happy that all my special friends in Baku or wherever I go, all they all play.
Yeah.
Better, worse, doesn't matter. We can always get some match ongoing.
And
so yeah, I think padel is a very promising and fast growing sport, which also started in Spain, and I think in Argentina it was big in the beginning.
Yeah, maybe Mexico is the original, but it's huge in Spain, yeah. And Argentina.
Huge in Spain. Now it's getting more popularity in Dubai. I think because of, like, the Sheikh of Dubai is like loves it, and there's all the big tournaments happening in Dubai. And I can tell you, I know nothing about pickleball. I saw it on TV. I will not lie to you. I didn't like it.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think that's a very common thing for, like, if you're going to start in a racket sport and you want to do it, then go through either pickleball or padel. But you're coming from tennis, I think it's hard to go down to pickle. I'd say like paddle's a nice medium. It's like still there's a lot of skill, you get to move a lot. And it's fun. It is to the point. If me, you know, we're at a poker stop or we're around and there's four guys that maybe have played, you know, have a general understanding. It's hard to just go play tennis. Like, you're gonna have a great server. It's not gonna be fun. Yeah. Right? It's like when we play paddle, you can still get a good workout, and even if you're not great.
There is many guys from the Triton stops that they all play paddle, tennis, and well, they go in the mornings, and like, I don't know, Brian Kim, Jaffe, who else? Ponakov. They all go play tennis or pickleball. I don't think, because pickleball, I think it's harder to play in
Paddle has more of a court, though. You have to, that's like, this courts are more expensive. It's like, actually, you can just put the pickle on a tennis court, basically.
Yeah. Actually, we had a group in the Triton in Monaco. We wanted to play paddle and help. And there are quite a few courts in Monaco. I think maybe like six or eight. And we couldn't book one hour.
Yeah,
to play. So we were like, I was calling the concierge. Oh, you can go 7 a.m. And I'm like, guys, I'm not up for 7 a.m.
Outside my building, it's the same. During like, you can get it maybe. Actually, what's only available is in the afternoon, the nighttime, and because in Miami it's so hot, the very early and very late, it's not available. But I heard a stat where there was like 6 courts in Sweden in 2014, and now there's 3,000 in Sweden. 3,000 courts in the U.S. There's only 500. Yeah. What about Azerbaijan? Is there a handful, or is it like?
Oh, no. We have 4 or 5, I think 5 or 6, but it's also a good stat because we don't have many tennis courts, you know, and it's growing. It's definitely growing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, very, very spectacular, very fun to play with friends. So I think this sport has bright future. And like after the Monaco story, so after we couldn't make any paddle reservations, I mean, they went to play tennis, which there are many tennis courts. Yeah. And I said, okay, guys, I'm pass.
Yeah. It's good to hear that it's picking up, and that's great. Cause I actually, the tennis, you know, sometimes you have players, I feel like they feel it's sort of a, they feel like it diminishes the game, or it's just not quite the same. Whether, you know, pickleball, it's sort of, they don't give it the respect, but it does seem to be growing extremely fast, and it is great. So that's good to hear, because I love it too. That's my game of choice, I think, for activity right now.
I definitely don't want to disrespect pickle. I just haven't seen much of it. Saw something on TV when I was in the US.
It's a wiffle ball, and it's like, you know, there's less movement. It's like, again, it's just sort of like anyone, it's a different game completely, right? I think you can still compare padel to tennis in some respects. It's a little closer, so that makes a lot of sense. And what about your import export, your business? What's your main sort of business? Is that food and catering? Like, can you explain a little bit about what you do outside of poker and what your main sort of
the food export thing? It's a long time we as a company doing that. So we import food in Azerbaijan, and we had exports, but now we're mostly doing imports. And it's like a big amount of meat, fish, well, you name it, right? And it's more of products that are for the medium market. So we don't have like high-end fish like that costs like, or high, like Kobe meat. We go for more of cheaper, basically, stuff that is very affordable for all mm-hmm. kinds of people. So this this business we've been doing for a long time already, since, I don't know, 15, 16 years, the company has been running. It's a big company. We have like more like from 120 to 150 people working.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Very cool. And
that's not the only thing. I have like interests in construction business, but like, I mean, I don't know much about that. So I would invest with my friend who is doing it and would be a silent partner type, you know? There are a bunch of restaurants we have and we're running both in Azerbaijan and abroad. So,
I do know nightlife, and you got a sweet new spot here, FOMO Baku, if I'm saying that right. I love that. Is it FOMO? Is that what it means? Fear of missing out? That's what it exactly means.
And yeah. I'm quite proud of this project. And
yeah, it looks amazing.
I came up with the name, but I had this idea to make a nightclub for a long time. Something was not working out, but I mean, you just go back to idea. Everything has to happen in the right moment. So I think this project, I have to say hi to my wife, who'll be watching us later. So I can proudly say we did it together.
That's awesome.
We did it together. And basically, when I went to some parties, traveled to, I don't know, Mykonos, Ibiza, all over, like places where there are best clubs. And understood how these things works. I was being very patriotic person and loving my country. I really wanted to do something like this in Baku. Baku wouldn't be a capital of electronic music or tech. So it was a kind of a risky thing. But at the beginning, it maybe was starting as a hobby project or something.
Yeah.
But after you put some, I think we had a great team. I basically hired the best people to do it. So the sound system and the lighting were doing the team that was doing Pacha Ibiza. So like the people that sound for Pacha Ibiza flew over to Baku to set sound. So it's like where that's like a mecca of party, like
Pacha Ibiza. Yeah, I've been there. That's the one for sure.
So basically, if you're gonna do something, do right. So that was my approach to this club. And after we opened, actually, it surprised me, and I understood that this can become something bigger and become a business in a way that. Already, I think there was a voting on DJ Mag, where they vote 100 best clubs in the world, and we are working for 6 months, and we took 77th place. So wow. This is like a big accomplishment, which we won't stop. And I'm thinking to scale it bigger, maybe open new locations, destinations, maybe grow it as a big club conglomerate.
I love it. That's, you know, if you want to get into Vegas or you start with one, do it right, and then you can decide, you know, where you go.
I won't be cocky, but I can say that Vegas has very nice looking clubs, but they're all trash. Sorry. I don't go to clubs when I'm in Vegas.
Well, listen, I would say yes, I get it. I know what you mean. There are some beautiful venues, and kind of they do it, you know, blow it up.
Venues are great, but I mean, like everything, the service, how they treat people, everything, the music. You know what I mean. You've been traveling and in Ibiza. If you've been to Ibiza, Mykonos, and all these places, you know what I mean. Like But in Vegas, I love the restaurants. I don't go to clubs.
For sure. Stylistically, these regions, countries, areas, they definitely are known. They have their pros and cons, and that's awesome. It sounds like you might have something very special that we might be seeing. Would it be FOMO? Would you? It would be called FOMO. You'd maybe do that brand.
No. I like the. Well, I mean, you used how this FOMO name came along, because in like when you're partying like with friends, you just don't go to a party or something, and how was the party? Like how was Solomon? Let's say, and then I'm like. Oh, I say it was great. Oh, I have a big FOMO. It's like this word, the fear of missing out. It's all the time it comes up. Yeah. So I said, I researched, there was no name club called FOMO. So I said, yeah. Why not?
It's
like idea. If you're not with us, you will have a FOMO, like kind of.
Yeah, of course. I think that's honestly a big thing in the world right now with in general. Cause like think back in the day when we were kids, even, right? It's like you go to a friend's house, you know, some friends do something or there's something going on and it's just whatever, right? But now Instagram and stories and this, like Snap, yeah. It's like you want to always know what's going on, where's what, who's doing what. It's just like that you can get caught almost in a place of sort of loss.
Actually, if you started about the club, it's not only the club. We have like a big big project. There are actually three things. There's a restaurant, there is a club, and there is like a small after party bar. The restaurant is called B4. So like B4. So it's like an idea of before you go to FOMO, you come to B4. It's an Asian fusion cuisine. And the after party or the bar is called YOLO. You know what's YOLO too. You only live once. So we have like smart branding names around
and,
this.
And do some of your businesses, are you able, you mentioned construction, you doing the nightclub, there's food there, you guys do food, some import, like are you able to sort of synergistically take everything together? Can you, do you use parts of your business?
Good question. I can see that I have less and less time. And at some point, when I was starting something new, I would have to kind of structure it in a group, like, because it's harder, yes. But now I still can have attention everywhere it is. But it's getting harder and harder.
Do you find you have a hard time?
The food business, it's been already we're doing it for a long time. So obviously, yeah. I have a very very good team, very good partner. So it can basically run without me mm-hmm. being day to day in the office. Obviously, when I'm in the office in Baku, I go and spend time, get into it. But there was days where me and my partner were traveling to Vietnam or to China to buy products. You know, this time is gone. I'm not doing it anymore. There are other people doing it. So, right. But FOMO is also, it's because it's became bigger. It's actually became bigger than I thought. And it is. So yes, I like spending time there, sitting with a team, thinking, but for now it's good. Let's see how it goes.
That's awesome. And how are the DJs? How is that like with the talent and the night, you know, music? Is there a pretty big scene for music creators?
I think we're definitely growing the scene because especially because in this region, Moscow and Istanbul were like centers. Like there was not much, but now because of the war and the situation of Russia and Ukraine, the Moscow, the parties, the foreigners are not going there. All the big DJs are not going there because you had to have, you could have in Moscow, like every week there was a big DJ. So yeah. I, being in this region and being like in the center, I thought would be a good idea since Moscow is gone, like competition wise gone. At least to put ourselves on the map, so people who were traveling from close by countries for like a big night of Solomon, let's say, why not come to Baku if it's like not so? That this was like kind of also time to be in the right time moment kind of thing.
Very cool. And what are you most excited about out of all the projects, all the things? Is it the next poker train stop in Montenegro? Is it the to expand this nightclub and business? What do you like to do the most?
I everything I do is passion. That's why I'm very excited about Montenegro. And I'm very excited about like let's say next week party with a big DJ. So I cannot measure something more or less. This is the things I like to do, and it's good. Especially in the club, it's good. When you have like a club like this, it's a good tool too. You meet a lot of people, you get to know a lot of people. I mean, this could be also very unique and very useful for business. Because like we haven't talked about that, but we in Azerbaijan have Formula One. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Formula One is happening. I think we had it for six years already, and we had Azerbaijan prolonged it for two more years. So obviously, having this tool of a nightclub, the biggest nightclub in the country, obviously, all these people, all these foreigners, beautiful people, would naturally ending up in our club.
Right,
and we'll have the best parties. Obviously, we're working on it now to getting the best DJ normally we work 2 times a week, but Formula Weekend is 4 days, so we'll work longer. After that, there is a, because events are happening, there is a COP29 event, a big climate change event that is happening in Azerbaijan. It was in Dubai. It held COP28 was in Dubai last year.
And okay.
Like big delegation. I don't know. It's like 50,000, 60,000 people expected to come to our capital.
Wow.
Had 100 to 110 presidents. So like, I understand that this year could be, and well, they all work, they all do their meetings, but then there's the entertaining part, right? Where they have to end up in the restaurants and clubs. So this year going to be very busy.
And how are the hotels and the give me a little bit of like downtown and stuff. Is it world class? Is it like there's all the big names there? Is it smaller city? It's yeah, a big major city. Not cool.
We have Four Seasons, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, that's probably, we have Ritz-Carlton recently opened.
Yeah,
we have all this Intercontinentals, Fairmonts, few Marriotts. So we have for such not a big city, we really have many beautiful hotels. I can tell you that.
And how does it?
Go
ahead. Sorry.
Done.
No, I was gonna say, how does it compare to Dubai? As we were just talking about Dubai, I'm heading there for the first time. I'm curious, like what?
Good comparison. I can say that Baku is Dubai 10 years ago, 80. So we are like, not because they are more ahead. Well, they are more ahead, obviously, because there are more people, more money invested, and whatever is done here is done very high quality. And yeah. I mean, you should just come and check. When you're in Dubai, you are like 2 hours away. So
oh, really? That close?
Yeah.
Wow.
Two hours 20 minutes, and I think there are 3 or 4 flights a day.
Man, I'd be on your couch if it wasn't two little kids and going in and out. But I appreciate that for sure. At some point, I'd love to come. And speaking of kids, how is being a dad and also to balance to do everything in business and poker and that? Like, how are you finding that difference now?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, I'm very happy dad. I can say I have two daughters. Elder is two and a half years old, and younger is 6 months. And I now it's much harder to go on long trips, on the poker trips. I actually make them shorter now, just because when I miss to be home a lot.
Yeah, it is. It's funny. I mean, honestly, that's like the sweet spot, though, right? When you're like, you want to be home and you want to also do so. Like, it's not like a. I mean, you used to grind. You used to play more poker. You would go on stop stuff. There's definitely times. I'm playing and I'm not even really into it. Now, when I do play, when I get to go somewhere, I feel more into it, right? It's more exciting. It's like, this is fun. It's shorter.
This is true.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember back before Tritons, even like when there was EPTs and stuff, like it became because I'm, and then when I was not married and didn't have kids, it sometimes became like almost a job, because I consider myself not a professional poker player, but it was like I was going to every stop, even the city that I didn't like.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, but now I enjoyed much more, because like Triton is like the ultimate thing for me. And then I would choose few APTs, the cities I like. I would not go to, like, there was an EPT Paris. I skipped it back in the days. I don't know what you have to cut my hand for me to not to go to EPT Paris.
Yeah.
I just skipped it because I want to stay home. I want to stay home. And there is Triton in a month. I will just go there. Like, for example.
Yeah. How far is that? Montenegro. So pretty close to.
Montenegro is, we don't have a direct. Oh, we actually will. I think we have a direct flight from Baku, but I'm not sure if it's in the summer or it there is direct like now. So I will be traveling to Istanbul and growing from Istanbul to Montenegro. So I think the total journey will take, I don't know, 6-7 hours, something like that.
Okay. So close, but not bad.
Yeah.
Not super close. And tell me about Triton. We're going to talk about your $4 million score. We got to cover that, of course, but tell me in general, how does Triton compare to these other tours and stops?
Oh, it's fantastic tour. I think that Paul and the team are making. I also, like I told you with my club thing before, they really got together the best team to handle it. There is Luca, Kate, all the dealers, Floors.
Yeah.
So basically, Indeed. they hired the best people, and I mean, you like you just feel yourself unique when you're on that stops on a Titan. Like you, like there, and all this coverage of the hands. They have this people. You play a hand in 1 minute. It's in the phone. Everything is like. So it's like, and the TV coverage is great. So I mean, I can't talk enough of them. I'm really actually happy that I won a Triton, and not if you choose one event to win, the Triton would be the one to win.
Yeah, it is. It's super sick, and it's a nice 7-figure score, and very, very cool. And I know we're gonna go run through that in a second here, but you back in the day used to start. You were playing probably, you know, online, I imagine, back then. But 2010.
Yeah. I remember this first score. It was like EPT the first Handle Map score was EPT Vienna.
Yeah,
and I think it was like one of my first. First main event and first poker tournament, and I was like in at last three tables, and like I was like, wow, this is easy.
I was just gonna say, it's actually funny on the podcast, anyone who's played poker out of the guests that are poker players or have played a lot of poker, their first Handle Map is like 90-95% of the time was a final table. So you actually the taste of it though too, deep and make a run, and that's also a main event, right? A lot of times they're playing 50-80% tournaments. This is 578. So and also one of your biggest scores at the time, I remember, if you remember the hand we played, this was like back, I guess I saw your friend one or a guy.
Ilkin, yeah, that's great. He's my friend, and he's my brother's business partner. He still travels to play some poker. He was actually in the Triton in Monaco, and it was like he won final table again. So the guy goes to three tournaments, wins one final table than another. So he's like has pretty sick results.
It's definitely. Definitely very cool when your friends, you know, you go to a stop, you both hit some big scores, and it makes the trip a lot more fun. And then here,
I remember the tournament. I think I sucked out on you on this tournament. Yes,
I remember. You know, what's funny. This was the first tournament my wife ever came to. Now, wife, we were dating, and this was January of 15. We met in Burning Man, and we started like going around, and she came, and I remember her on the rail watching, and this was like, you know, it was a fun one, right? This was like a turbo 10K at the end of the series. And I remember the hand. It was whatever, a cooler, but that was a big, at the time, this was,
I think I had queens and you had kings.
Yes.
Right. Queens, yeah. You see, good memory. Good final table. We had Jason Mercier. We had who else?
Danny Stern, Wheeler. Yeah. Barry Hutter. A lot of Sean Winter. Yeah. Sean Winter at this tournament is where he picked off Timex for like $1 million. You know this story in the 25? He had like half a stack. He bet. So he paid like double or whatever. He did it, and he chopped it from 975 and got 975 extra from like a 10K bet with Timex. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are good memories. But so let's talk about your $4 million win, because you got a lot of scores. You have covered a lot of ground. You did travel.
I think I had two 25K second place finishes.
Yep.
And third or fourth 25, but that was all EPTs. But that was like kind of the biggest ones I had before the big score on Triton.
Yeah.
But like it was second, third, fourth, never the winner.
Yeah, never, always the bridesmaid, never had the huge score. And tell me this, I actually remember interviewing you there, and I was there in this exact event, and we were talking, and then you ended up shipping it, and $4 million, man. Tell me about what went right here and how this was.
I think everything fell my way. I can tell you that from start to finish. I ran really well all the tournament, and I think I did play pretty good, very good. And I did few mistakes also, like one mistake on the final table. But even when I did a mistake or something, everything was turning out, and I was winning the flips, winning. You know how it is. Like to win the big tournament, you definitely have to run good. But on the final, it's actually pretty stacked final table. I had this key hand you mentioned about Sean Winter. He entered the final table as a chip leader, and we had a key hand where I think I rivered a gut shot on him. Yes, yeah. I river to gut shot on him. And yeah, I don't want to go into details of the hand, but that was a turning point. And I bet big on the river. Sean paid me off. And after that, I had like, I think, close to 50 or 60% of chips in play, five left or something like that. And after that, just up until heads up, it was a smooth ride. And at heads up, there was we played it for pretty long, even though it started pretty deep. And Tobias, the guy I played heads up, he is one of the best online cash game heads up players. So it was actually a tough opponent. Pretty very happy because at some point he got a chip lead of me, and I thought, fuck, second again, come on. But I kept my composure. At the end it was a flip, the last hand, ace king versus two eights, but before that I had few interesting hands that I won. Right. From him, generally in heads up, you know, you have to play almost every hand. There was some, yep, some shoves, light shoves and stuff that got. So I think the heads up probably was the hardest part of the whole tournament.
Yeah. And do you do a lot of preparation when tournaments like this? I mean, this was the Luxon 200K invitation where there's a businessman and a pro. You qualify as a businessman, correct? Even though, I mean, you're a pretty confident, yes, player. So that's yes, nice, right? That has to help a little bit. Although, I mean, you for a living. So it's, but you're definitely like one of the, you're competent. Obviously, very competent and know the game.
Yeah, well. Yeah. Obviously, I would rank myself up on the one of the tops on the businessman bracket.
Yeah,
have Orpen. Hi, if you will be watching us. Yeah, I think he'll be yep, the top businessman there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and it's pretty good format, especially very good format for me to play whole day on the businessman bracket. And yeah. So
that's awesome. And then what about preparation wise? Do you come in early? Do you like to work out? Do you sleep when you're like, what's sort of like your when you play live poker, what's your routine?
It's actually changed now from since I won, because when I won, I was not doing much sports. I was lazy, but for the last 6 months, I had a weight bet, and I like Jeju, I was working out every day before going to play. And I had my fitness coach with me. So I was like doing like a proper sportsman preparation. Like I was like eating healthy, working out, then going to play. And I'm actually feeling much more energetic at the table, better presence. And I think definitely making sports every day helps. But when I, in the Cyprus, when I won it, no, I was not doing any sports, but preparing. I don't know, man. It just felt like a dream. These 3 days felt like a dream. I can honestly not remember much of it because I was like in a dream, you know?
Yeah.
Couldn't believe I won.
Again, you've had some scores.
I can tell you. I had like four or five caches in Jeju. I can tell you about all these scores much more precise than the score in Cyprus. No, I mean, I remember the feelings. I remember what I was doing. I was obviously speaking with my poker friends about my final table position, the chips I have, who is in position, who is out of position, what is the ICM plan. Yeah. What do I do if I become short? What do I do if I have a chip lead? Oh, yes, I was doing that because like I have, it would be stupid not to do it because we have all the best players and that are willing to help you. Why not? Like I asked, yes.
How do you think the game is changes a bit or strategy wise when you're playing a feature table or a final table and the whole cards are there, right? So like during portion of the tournament, you know, in tournaments in general, when you know that people will see the whole cards or that you can find out later, right? What they had in theory, like
actually it's a great question. Because poker is a general game of hiding information. So lots of times you play a hand, and then you go and watch the stream, whether this hand made a stream, because it's important when people see something or they don't see how they, I think I have pretty good idea how the top ranks, top pros think of me. So
your that's super important. Yeah, your awareness of how you're perceived is.
I think I have a very good idea of that. So it's the stream part is actually very important. And it's well, but playing on the other side, on the final tables, on the TV tables, lots of fun. Love it, especially on Tritons. Especially with all the great commentary they have. I think they're doing a great job, all of them.
Yeah, it is a high production value for sure. And do you see yourself, the current landscape of poker, how do you feel with online, live, like where do you feel it's at? Do you feel like it's in a good place? Is it, you know, are you bullish on it? Do you think it's going to grow?
It's a hard question. I'm speaking about a lot of, I spoke some with my poker friends about that. I know that, something weird is happening with online poker because like there was a Stars, now there is a GG. And, I don't play online. I used to play not a lot, but like, I don't know, 10 years ago, maybe. Now I don't play online for a few reasons. First of all, because I think it's much, much more tougher than life. Mm-hmm. One first reason. Second reason is the time difference, because now it's 8:30 p.m. in Baku. Yeah. So all the tournaments start late night. And if I will be running deep on the tournament, I'll have to stay awake until the morning. And that would totally spoil my whole day. No office, no family stuff. And so to play online poker, you have to live. I think the best time zone is London. And we are like 4 hours ahead of London. So, and I cannot tell you, would be a bad person to comment on online poker because I have not played it for a long time. But I can see that it's very tough. And less bad players would be liking to go there and especially with all these tools out there, why they would go and play against the machines. So I understand, like businessmen and amateur players, why they want to play live and they don't want to play online. This is pretty logical to me. How it will evolve, I don't know. I mean, poker is booming now. Look at the main events in Vegas. Look at these win stops. Like they're hitting all the numbers. Maybe it's because of the environment. Maybe because it's also because of crypto prices. Also other possibility.
Yeah. What are your thoughts? I mean, crypto sort of looked like it was just going to run away to the moon. And then as always, there's some correction.
Oh my God. Just before we started, I received a message on my phone that Bitcoin is under 60 or what's it?
Is it really? I saw it was 60-ish, yeah. 62, but did it really go down there?
Yeah. No, it's 60.4, 60.5. Oh. Yeah. So what you asked about my idea on crypto or what?
Yeah, like I mean, do you enjoy it? Do you like? Is it? Do you think it's? Are you bullish on it?
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it. I'm a long time supporting crypto, but I've never done any crypto trading stuff because I have Bitcoin and Ethereum, and that's all I have. And I never went to buy alts, meme coins, whatever, sell this, buy that. Like, because I think to do that, you have to invest all your time in it. And well, I don't have neither time nor I want to do it. So I just but I think with all the years that passed, my strategy kind of, if you summarize the price of crypto, that was the best strategy, just to have Bitcoin and Ethereum. Like, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. It is funny when you start looking at the last 5 years, 3 years, and you say, you know, investments or business and doing things, or you could just like, you know, if I just took this and just kind of left it in that, it would be, you know, it's just smooth. It's also just from the time and effort. The thing about business and things, I would imagine you agree with, whether it's construction or building a nightclub or import export, like it's fun to do business too, though, right? To learn, to grow, to make connections, to sort of learn industries, and
for sure,
you got to be diversified. But it is kind of wild. Kind of outpaces everything. It seems like it just seems.
Yeah, but this is like, of course. You invest, people in the business, like in nightclub or in this construction, on the you come, people are there, sit with the plans, how they will assess how they will go in their year, and you look to the end of the year, the results, and like I don't know, X amount of money made, right? And then you see, if I just put this money in the Bitcoin, and you think of the result. But obviously, it's a not right of way of thinking, because if you don't do that, if you don't go work on your project yourself, you dig into it, make mistakes, lose sometimes, lose your investments. That happens. Happened to me.
Yeah.
Not all the businesses I started, not the all places I invested were successful. You only see successful. Sure. Yeah. So that's how you get, I don't know, more competent. Competent is the right word. Competent and better, I guess, better businessman.
Yeah, there's learning to all of it, and it is fun. And what is, when you travel around the world to tournaments, do you make it a point to get to see the city? Have you done better with that over the years, where you come early, leave later? You mentioned your wife, that to play poker and focus, and then have her come enjoy, maybe versus just like, you know, because that is an interesting dynamic with kids or with a wife, with someone been playing poker.
Yeah, actually she, before the kids, she was traveling more with me for the poker stops. Now she also wants to stay more with the kids. So I kind of go more, I think, alone to the poker stops.
Yeah.
But when coming to going out after like a event out of the casino, I definitely love it, because I'm a very social person. I like to go out with friends, have nice dinners, have wine. So obviously the stops that are in nice cities were my priority. So yeah, I can tell you my Jeju actually was a disappointment, but because it's a great casino, very nice, but there was like nothing to do at night. I was happy and lucky that I almost ran deep every tournament I played. One tournament I busted early, like it was nightmare. There was no bars, nowhere to watch Champions League.
It
was like a nightmare spot. I think it's because of the season. It's probably summer resort, and we were there in winter. But getting out to see something at Jeju was not the greatest spot.
I was in the airport, the town, some other city there for the APT in September. It's slipping my mind, but Jeju is amazing. South Korea, I love the culture, love the food. Just I you know, that's some of the thing though. Some of the stuff.
No. South. Where, yeah, some. Yeah, maybe. I mean, we didn't get to see. I mean, we are in the casino, so at night we go out at 11, and it's winter time, cold. So maybe if you go to some part of Jeju that is like 1 hour from the place, maybe you find something. But like close to the venue, there was nothing. And I think all the Triton regulars will agree with me on that. On the other side, we came to play poker, and come on, maybe less distraction, better, you know.
that might favor you though, right? For someone, you're married, kids, and you're not like such a partier now, so it might be better like to let people. You want people to go out, be not on their A game, and have some shenanigans. But it's awesome. And where's your favorite place in the world, like other poker wise or not? Where do you love to go and travel if you're gonna take vacation?
Oh, vacation.
And your favorite poker.
Actually, if I have vacation and have some time, free more time, I want to go back to Japan, because we were there just for 5 days, and I think that's nothing. Even for Tokyo, it's nothing. And I definitely want to go back to Japan. And I have not been to. I mean, I'm crazy how it is, but some. I don't know why. I still have never been to South America. I just want to go to South America, like all the to Peru, Brazil, Colombia. Haven't been there, so want to see that. Europe, obviously, all the major and the best places. So this would be my and Australia. Australia, haven't traveled to Australia too. So Australia, South America, Japan.
Very cool.
I mean, you can put it in any order.
And what is your favorite poker place to play? Stop.
Oh, favorite poker play to play? Cyprus now, probably. Actually, Cyprus is really good.
Yeah.
You know why Cyprus is good? It's because it's a great hotel. It's we were playing in the North Cyprus, so it's a Turkish Cyprus, right? And it's the same language I speak. Very similar food. So I kind of was feeling like at home there. Cyprus is good, but I like Vegas, man. I like to be in Vegas.
Will you go to the WSOP this summer?
Yes, I will go. I will definitely can make it for 2 months, how all the like all the regulars do. Because there is lots of things going with my family. There is a wedding of my cousin. So I will pick my spots, look the calendar, maybe choose most important tournaments. I will definitely be there from 3 weeks, maybe 3 4 weeks. Yeah, not more.
Very cool. Yeah, I plan to go play the main. And do you usually take the family for that, or no, not to Vegas? Or if you go for that long,
I
you
actually every year, me and my wife were talking about that, whether to go there already, not every year, but since we have kids.
yeah.
But I honestly think Vegas is like not the best spot for kids,
Yep.
because of you cannot pay in the summer, especially when the WSOP happens. It's very hot out there, right?
Yep.
So you cannot go out because it's so hot. And if you even go out to walk with the kids, then go back in the hotel and it's like air conditioning.
Yeah.
And maybe if you get like a off strip rent off strip house and like with a pool and stuff, it could be cool. But doing that for 3 weeks also doesn't make sense. So you need to go for longer. So for now, I just kind of maybe in the future it will change. But for now, I'm okay going there to 2 3 weeks, play myself and come back.
It's the
Maybe
same.
maybe 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 sorry.
It's the same for me. I was saying with we have kids the same age, basically. I have a 1 year old and a but now almost five. Like, it is a tough spot, right? To go, like, okay, I'm gonna go play poker all day. Wife and kids are there. They can't really go outside, right? It's so hot, and then you're just kind of like, it's tough.
Actually, Olivia, my elder daughter, she already been to Vegas once, and she was like I think 1 year and a half ago. She'll never remember it, but I remember it was not easy, and she got sick. We called a doctor. So I mean, just not just well, Vegas is a sin city. It's not for kids. So we keep
Yeah,
them at
it's not the
home.
dream spot to go for kids, that's for sure. And what would you say is, if you were gonna like make a 5 year plan right now, where do you see yourself, like, business wise, poker wise? Do you have more kids? What sort of, like, what do you like really want to do over the next 5 years? Or do you have goals to be the number one, to really push it in poker? Is it more business? Do you want to slow down with family?
Good question. I never give too much thought on that. But, well, obviously, I think I have some short-term goals, long-term goals. Not about every. I don't want to speak about some of them. But for now, I'm just getting a better version of myself. I actually can see that every year I'm kind of getting a better version of myself, whether in business, in poker, in family relations, friend relations. So there are a few definitely business projects that I'm looking into and which one I want to grow. One of them is FOMO. Actually, I want to this brand to become one of the biggest
FOMO
brand in the
Miami.
world.
Let's go. Let's do a paddle
Let's
club,
go, man. Let's
night
go.
club,
FOMO one.
all in one. I'll tell you what, they're doing something here in Miami. It's crazy, called it's an ultra. And the guy who just on
I
my
know, I
last
know.
podcast, they have
I know what's ultra.
30 outdoor courts. No, not the festival. I'm talking about Ultra Paddle.
Oh,
You heard me? Ultra Paddle.
okay.
So they have a restaurant, spa, like coffee shop. I've seen they in 30 courts plus indoor courts. I mean, obviously, you tack on maybe, yeah, nightclub or day club, something like that. FOMO could be good. Maybe put it all in.
But if you ask me what would be probably your next destination, I think Dubai also is an interesting
Okay.
spot for FOMO. Especially, I can tell you haven't been there yet. You're flying there tomorrow, I think. But
Yeah,
I don't think
hopefully.
Dubai has good nightclubs. So I think if I can do everything that I did in Baku, I think that would be a
You
success.
said they don't have really good nightclubs in
No,
Dubai?
no,
Really?
no. Oh
I
no,
thought that was I
they
thought it
have
was like nightlife
no,
place.
no. No, they have great restaurants, very similar to Vegas. Great restaurants, shit nightclubs. So Dubai, they have big arenas, like big event arenas that where they come the big DJs come and there's like 10,000 people, 20,000 people, whatever. But that's not a nightclub. And when there is a not they actually no good nightclubs, I think in Dubai.
Very interesting.
When you're in Dubai, hit me up. I'll send you a few locations. You go and see yourself. I'm not the one who is telling
yeah.
you.
Well, no, I mean, I listen, I'm not a nightclub guy myself, and I'm going with my wife and love to go check out some cool like lounges or restaurants and stuff. I know there's some great food and great restaurants for sure. Also that I mentioned the event Karate Combat, and that's something that you said they do a lot of events. They have big spaces. I'd say like the tennis center. Speaking of tennis, you like tennis. I think it was like a tennis venue there maybe. So we're going to, I think that's
probably they have a Dubai Open that is like one of the major events, it's not a Grand Slam, but it's like one of the big events of the year, and it happens in Dubai. Well, Dubai has all the sporting events. You get everything you can.
Okay. Well, that's good to know for sure. I got to say I am going to take you up. If I were to come to Azerbaijan and bring, if I'm like my family, say we go to Montenegro for this Triton and or whatever, we decide to like kind of pop over. What's the best time of year to go there? When are you around, and when is it like enjoyable to go?
Azerbaijan, Baku, I think is the best time is like May, because it's great weather. Mm-hmm. And September, summer is a little bit more hot. Like, I mean, I'm not familiar with Fahrenheit, but like it can get to 42 degrees, 43 degrees. Like, you're Googling what is it in Fahrenheit, right? Yeah. So I think the best time is May and September. And well, whenever you want to be my guest, you and your wife, I would happily invite you, because I really like to have guests in Baku and show them around, because we have a pretty amazing city and amazing country.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I'm there. I want to check out my list. I went to Albania for that year, the final for the when Roma played there versus Feyenoord, and that was like random to go, but it was like one to check off the list, and one of those countries that's like kind of edgy. It feels cool. Like I've never would just like go there, but it was great. Azerbaijan, you know, I have a reason to go, and I definitely want to check it out. It just seems like a great place. And again, I really, really do appreciate the time. I know we're going to be running each other on some of these future stops, and hopefully I'll see you in Vegas, which whether we have the families there or not. And GG Millions, I know you're not playing much online poker, maybe on as commentary. I know you're not, you said you haven't really done commentary, but I know you're a great player.
No.
Hear from you. And that would
I actually would maybe one day we do it, but
you don't have to give all your secrets. I don't want the guys, all them to know how talented you are, but it's just like commentary.
But I actually watched few episodes with you commentating with the guys. Yeah. And I mean, when I'm listening, actually, it's also very good learning when I'm listening. I don't remember who it was, but I understand the game, I understand what they're doing, but I cannot explain it as good as they would do it. You know what I mean, right? So
yeah.
So commentating in that way, but yeah, thank you for the podcast. It's like a first podcast. I
was going to ask, you mentioned that. So you generally, this, you've done some interviews, but not like officially a podcast before.
Yeah, I've done some interviews, especially in winning interviews, EPT interviews.
This is the full deal. We did Azerbaijan tourism. We got to know you better. Tennis, business, nightclub, poker career. We cover a lot, and we're definitely going to have more to come. So I really do appreciate that. I appreciate the time. I know
thank you very much, Jeff,
over there, and I will be leaning on you for some Dubai recommendations for sure.
Okay, sure. Thank you very much, Jeff.
All right, cheers, my friend. All right, everyone, that is episode number 199. Ramin from Azerbaijan, last name Hajiev. That's what I'm going with. If it's close, he's going to count it. So just better than most. And we battled over the years. We were on a lot of familiar stops together in poker, and he is one of those kind of hybrid business poker, can kind of do it all. And we look for more continued success from him. We'll have episode number 200 coming up here very shortly. Excited about that milestone. And we will see you guys on the next episode of the Flow Show. Thanks again to Ramin for the time.
Thank you, my friend. Great time.